This episode is made possible by Armoire. I love genius companies founded by women, and Armoire is one of them. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days, and then when you're ready for new clothes, you just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. To me, Armoire solves so many issues I struggle with today, the biggest one being accumulation of stuff. Let's face it, women want to feel on trend and fresh in their clothes, so we like to shop for new clothes often. But I also get overwhelmed when I have too much to choose from, which happens after years of shopping. I forget what clothes I have, and I end up wearing the same thing over and over. Armoire allows you to rent high-quality designer clothing for every occasion and then send it back. Whether you're planning your outfit for a date night, packing for a conference, or in need of a gown for a black tie event, you will be the best-dressed person in the room without ever having to brave a department store fitting room with those unflattering fluorescent lights again. Trust me, your overly cramped closet and the environment will thank you. Right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/heel. That's armoire.style/heel to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. Welcome to the Heal with Kelly podcast. I'm Kelly Noonan Gorse, and every week I speak to the leading doctors, healers, spiritual teachers, and scientists to find out what is truly possible when it comes to healing. I also interview real people with extraordinary healing stories. My philosophy is, what's possible for one is possible for all. Thank you for joining me on this beautiful journey of remembering our divine nature and tapping into the truths that shall set us free. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Heal Podcast. Today, I'm so excited to have Nicole Avant here with me to talk about her book and her life and her family, her mom and her dad, and Think You'll Be Happy, Moving Through Grief with Grit, Grace, and Gratitude. Oof, it's a book everybody needs to read. Nicole's an author, producer, and the former ambassador to the Bahamas. She was nominated by President Barack Obama and unanimously confirmed by the U.S. Senate to serve as the 13th U.S. ambassador to the Bahamas. On September 9, 2009, she was sworn in by the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, becoming the youngest as well as the first African-American woman to hold the position. In addition to her stellar service abroad, Nicole has a legacy of philanthropy at home. In 2007, she was named the Next Generation Leader by the American Cancer Society and also served as an academic counselor at the Neighborhood Academic Initiative, a daily mentorship program for high school students sponsored by USC. Avant is a current member of the Board of Trustees of LACMA, as well as a board member of A Sense of Home, an organization that creates first ever homes for former foster youth who age out of the foster care system having never been adopted. Oh, I love that. In October 2023, Nicole released her memoir, Think You'll Be Happy, Moving Through Grief with Grace, Grit, Grace, and Gratitude. She gives a raw and courageous look into how she found the light in her darkest moment and reminds us that grief is different for everybody, and we have the power to move through it in our own unique way. That's what we're gonna talk about today. And currently, Avant is a producer of the upcoming Tyler Perry film, 6888, which I wanna find more about. And she lives in Los Angeles with her husband, Ted Sarandos, Netflix co-CEO, and is the proud stepmother of Tony and Sarah. Yes.
Well done.
Welcome to the show. I know. There's so much there.
Thank you.
So, yes, we are here. This episode's going to drop, I think, on around Mother's Day.
Great.
And this was all inspired by your incredible mother, just the epitome of class and strength. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you are more and more like her every day, if not, you know, you are just, this book is truly amazing. I want to read what Tyler Perry wrote. He said, unfortunately, I've seen my share of people dealing with all kinds of tragedies, but never have I seen anyone approach it with such clarity, class, and grace as the way that Nicole Avant lays it out in this book. I was angry, I cried, and I screamed as I felt I took this journey right beside Nicole through every page. By the end, I was clear that her mom, Jacqueline Avant, was right. Think You'll Be Happy is a love song to a great woman told through the eyes of the great woman she created.
Aww.
It's so good and it's so true.
Thank you. Thank you.
So for, I hope you don't mind.
No.
But just for the listeners who mm-hmm. don't know your story and your mom's mm-hmm. story, can you just mm-hmm. share what happened on December 1st, 2021?
On December 1st, very early in the morning, around, I got a call. You know how your intuition just wakes you up? Usually I sleep through the night, and my intuition kept waking me up. And I finally looked at my phone, and I see all these missed calls from my brother. And I'm thinking, oh, no. And I immediately thought, oh, no, something happened to Dad, because he was, you know, 90s. And then my husband, Ted, calls, and I answer. I see him calling in, and I answer. I go, what is going on? What's wrong? And he said, Nicole, You have to get dressed. You have to get up. You have to get dressed. I go, what's wrong? And he said, your mom's been shot. I'm thinking, what? What are you talking about? And then I'm looking at the phone and I think I'm in a dream. And I said, Teddy, where is she? Because I never even thought she was at home. She's lived in that house since, you know, 1969. Nothing's ever happened there. And he says, Nicole, I don't know the information. I don't have everything. Your brother just called me, but just get to Cedars-Sinai. I'm on my way. He was at a retreat. Thank God he was still in Los Angeles. So he was on a work retreat. And so somebody had broken into my parents' house. They were going to snatch and grab and go to the next one. And my mom, unfortunately, was up and encountered the intruder. And as she was running, you know, to get out of the house, he shot her. And everything obviously changed immediately, even just being shot, not knowing if she's gonna live. I was hoping she would live. I didn't know, you know, when you hear shot, I'm like, maybe she, oh, well, she's at the hospital. You know, your brain starts going into all these beautiful scenarios to survive. Mm-hmm. So, oh, you know, well, she's at the hospital. So that means, you know, if she's alive, and maybe it was, you know, who knows what happened. And regardless, you know, my life changed dramatically. Unfortunately, she didn't make it through surgery. She had lost too much blood. I mean, she was 81 years old. And I had a father to take care of. All of a sudden, you know, my 91-year-old father slumps over me after the doctor gives the news that your mom didn't make it. And I'm telling you, there were so many emotions that went through me. But I felt as if I say in the book, like I kind of felt like I became my mom all of a sudden. And I noticed I sat up really straight when they gave us the news. And all of a sudden I had my mother's energy running through me of, okay, she was so organized and so diligent and so dedicated and determined in any situation. And I noticed that all of these new energies started welling up inside of me. Yeah. And I said, okay, now this new journey, this terrible tragedy, but it created a new journey that I didn't know what was going to happen, but here I am.
As you're saying that, you know, you embodied a different energy, yeah. You embodied your mom's energy. Yeah. I just, it's so much of this book is about your beautiful mom, but then you talk about your dad too, yeah. Who was this legendary, you know, music executive. Yes. And as you're saying that, you have these like one-line quips of his.
Yes.
He said that she did shit.
She did shit.
It's just like, it's such a wonderful journey that you take us on, because your dad's like one-liners are so like zing, you
yes.
know, and it's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm fascinated lately by like how, as humans, we're never given a manual of how to feel.
Right.
And most
right.
of us, especially raised by our family, you know, our parents, like we there was no repair back then.
Right.
It was just, I mean, your parents sounded extraordinary.
I like that you used that word repair.
You know?
That's a really good word. And I think a lot of people don't use that, because I just said to someone yesterday in an interview, I'm in repair. Yes. My heart is in repair. I don't know if I'm always going to be in repair. Mm-hmm. I might be. It's okay,
yeah.
But we need to talk about repair more. It's almost like as if I feel, you know, the signs under new construction,
yes.
Under construction,
yes.
I'm under construction. I have to rebuild. Like, my life was shattered. Everything fell apart. Everything that I knew fell apart. Everything that I depended on fell apart. And I had to remind myself every day that as human beings, even though we haven't really shared what we should have been sharing for many years, people have gone through tragedy. Mm-hmm. And the ones that did share with us, and the ones that showed us their pain, but also showed us moving forward in their pain, I think makes a huge difference. And it made a huge difference in my life. Mm-hmm. And my mother, she loved history so much because she would always say, the ones that taught the lessons, the ones that actually showed you, that let you inside of their pain, that let you inside of their journey, anytime something happens, you can have something to fall back on. You can have something to say, oh, this person did that. Or as I write in the book, you know, she gave me the permission slip at Hawthorne Elementary School when I was maybe in fourth or fifth grade to watch a documentary on when President Kennedy was shot. And, you know, we've all seen it now a million times, but we were young then. Mm-hmm. So that's why, you know, you had to have your parents sign. They said, you know, it could be traumatic for people. But my mom said, it's very important that you see this. And it wasn't about, she taught me so much in that scenario. One, do not focus on his death. You do not focus on how someone dies. Mm-hmm. Focus on how they lived, what they did, what they gave, how they served. Always focus on the life versus the death. And then she went into Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis and how she marched on and moved forward. And of course she was in pain, obviously. And this whole thing happens in front of the world, right? But again, it's my mom wanted me to watch and see that during in tragic moments or watching, there's this great documentary on, well, there's many documentaries, every documentary on the civil rights movement that she had me watch that were difficult. And it's, you know, people getting pummeled with bricks, or they have the fire hoses on them and their skin is flying off. And literally just, and she never shielded me from other people's pain. Mm. And I'm so grateful to that, because she needed me to see that all people experience pain in different ways at different times, and we're all treading through life, you know, trying to find a manual, to your point, and we're all in repair in some way, mm-hmm. spiritually, physically, emotionally. And I'm just so grateful to her to show me human life and also show me people who decided to be triumphant, people who decided to not be in denial of their pain, but to use their pain for a purpose, to share their pain in hopes that you can heal other people, which is why I wrote the book, because I thought, okay, this is an offering. This book is an offering to anyone who might want a different perspective on death, might want a different perspective on life. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to share my journeys of the ups and downs and what I did to kind of be able to sit here, you know, and yeah.
It's really good because, you know, you're so honest in the book, and these things that you're describing about what your mother exposed you to, and mm-hmm. she literally gave you kind of the tool set or the mm-hmm. the value system mm-hmm. and the foundation to navigate the very thing, yes. her exit, which mm-hmm. nobody would have ever imagined.
Exactly.
And at the same time, she, you know, you give examples of how she, you know, she was extraordinary. And to even talk about, you know, Ruby Bridges at
yes.
6 years old.
Yes.
And, you know.
Again, making sure that I saw someone's pain as a six-year-old trying to integrate a school, a six. And you have adults taunting you. You have mothers walking into a classroom and pulling their children out in front of you. I mean, the psychological damage.
Yeah.
Yet I, you know, I've met her once and I've spoken to her a few times, and she's really truly a hero of mine, because she's so strong and how she got herself to be where she is now and not be a victim. She is not a victim. She wants people to be victorious. Mm. She wants to talk about her past so that we can all remind ourselves that we're human. Mm-hmm. And that we're all valuable, no matter what color you are, no matter what religion you are, everyone's valuable. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, again, we use history hopefully to understand that pain isn't new and that grief isn't new. It's a part of being human, mm-hmm. is grieving. Mm-hmm. Because we're all going to lose something, or we're all going to feel a sense of loss. It could be a breakup of a marriage. It could be the loss of a dog, a child, a parent, a grandfather. It doesn't matter. We're mm-hmm. all going to feel it, and we don't get to escape it. That's mm-hmm. the thing. And I think that's why it's so important to talk about. And we don't need to be ashamed. I mean, I remember, I think I say in the book, I was so embarrassed, actually. Like, I felt this shame when my mom died. I was thinking, oh my gosh, is everyone is going to stare at me in a different way? Is everyone going to look at me? All of a sudden, I felt this coat of shame. And I'm like, why am I? Wait, I didn't do anything. My mom didn't do anything. Because I had no one to call. Mm. I didn't know anybody who had been in my situation. And it's not, you know, everyone's like, you should go talk to this person and this person. Like, well, what am I going to say? Because they're not going to tell me what they did when their mom was murdered, because mm-hmm. I don't know anybody. Mm-hmm. You know, so I thank the people who I did find online, or I just looked around, and I'm just so grateful for people who share mm-hmm. and who share the pain. And I think it was Pastor Rick Warren said the best thing. I heard him on TV one night. He said, the deeper the tragedy, or the harder the tragedy, the bigger the tragedy, the less you say.
I know. I was like,
and I had to learn that one. I was like, ooh, I haven't done that in my life.
I wrote that down as one of the that's a good one.
Yeah.
Speaking of Rick Warren, and you quote the Bible in here many times, mm-hmm. and you know, I would, you know, being a person of faith as well, you seem to have leaned into your faith,
yes.
but I'm sure you had moments where maybe you didn't. But I would have, like, for my mom to be murdered by the very type of person she had spent her whole life helping mm-hmm. to try and change and give them hope and mm-hmm. inspiration and a new perspective. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, I would have questioned my faith. I would have been like, well, it's all, none of it makes sense. And maybe there is no God, you know.
Right.
Did you have moments of that?
I did, for a second, but not long, because my mom always taught me that the universe is good, and that God is good, and that we have free will. And the atrocities in life, or the choices that people make, you always have to put it on that person for that choice versus the higher power. Don't blame the higher power for the choice that the person made in the moment. It has nothing to do. Everyone has free will. Mm. I know lots of children. When I used to work at USC and worked with so many of my students at the Neighborhood Academic Initiative, they had just as many challenges as the other kids in their neighborhood who chose the wrong way, who chose a different path, who chose the path of violence and negativity or stealing or what have you. And it's always about a choice of, I'm not going to do that. Mm-hmm. I want to create a significant, meaningful life. And regardless of how difficult it is, I'm going to do that. And so I think it always goes back to the power of choice. And I'm so happy that my mom and dad both would always go back to free will. Everyone has a choice every day of who they're going to serve. You know, who are you going to serve? And are you, if you want to be part of the light, then you have to really make that decision every day. And anyone can go the wrong way. All of us can, in different ways, but we all can. And so I know that there are different circumstances that lead people to different things. I understand that. But I don't, if we start basing that theory and principle upon everyone, then it's so unfair to people. You know, if we all start saying, well, they came from this neighborhood, or they didn't have parents, or they didn't have this. Mm-hmm. Well, I know lots of people. Most social workers that I know have the worst childhoods imaginable. And then they made a choice mm-hmm. to be a healer. And they made a choice to take their pain and turn it into something purposeful and help somebody else not go through that, or help them along while they're going mm-hmm. through their trauma. And I have a lot of respect for that.
Totally. So much that you were saying, because I've heard that. I mean, I'm, you know, in my mid-40s, and raised Catholic and, you know, have studied spiritual, all that, and I've always questioned, like, how is these wars still happening? And what, how is all this tragedy and school shootings? And like, how can I, you know, we all ask the question, like, how can God allow this to be? But it, the way you just said it, it just like landed. It's like, you know, spirit and source is this like loving, intelligent container. But we are dropping into this, these bodies, having a human experience, illusion of separation, and we're making choices. And that's why shit's going down.
That's why shit's going down. Exactly.
You know?
Because if you have free will and we have, and you work with divine intelligence, it's like I always say, a match can either, you know, you could light a candle with the match, you can burn a house down with the match. You know what I mean? It's what's the intention behind everything. And yet we all want to blame source. And we all want to blame divine intelligence. And we all think, well, if there's a loving God, how can these things happen? But it's already done. And it does say throughout all scripture, you know, you're going to have trials and tribulations on the earth. If you look at it as a school and your soul's here to learn and your soul's here to evolve, I hope that's what we're supposed to look at history for and say, wow, you know, I'm so sad that these things happen. Yet I'm so grateful that we've evolved to here and we don't do those things anymore, most of it. I mean, I understand things happen in the world still, but for the most part, we are way better off, and people don't even want to say that because everyone's looking for perfection. It's never that.
Yeah, and we talk a lot about forgiveness, which I want to get into now, but as you're saying that, it's like we have choices, and I'm always like, well, the abusers usually end up abused. The kids who got abused end up becoming abusers a lot of the time, or it's just, and so I'm always like, well, it's just so hard because, like, how far back does it go for blame? And, like, who, that child that grew up to be this, you know, even, like, school shit, I'm just trying to justify, like, it's not really their fault because they were raised in the thing, or, you know, but then, like, at a certain point, it's, they made a choice, and we all make choices, and there's a scale, and when this person got caught, now has to face justice, and you were like, you know, I will forgive for myself and him as a soul.
Yes.
But he needs to be off the streets because he did the same thing right after my parents' house.
Right.
And he is a danger to society. So there's like this balance of like, forgive, but also we've got to, there has to be consequences and justice.
And I believe in redemption, and sometimes redemption has to be behind bars.
Correct. In this case, for sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes it does.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think I also say in the book, you know, a lot of us, everything now is, you know, mental illness, mental illness, mental illness. I understand that. At the same time, I think it's very unfair when we keep painting criminals in these unjust acts. And well, obviously there's a mental illness, obviously, but I think there's a spiritual illness. I don't think it's just mental. I think that's where everyone's, we need to draw, we need to separate that. Because I think it's very unfair. There are so many people that we both know or that we don't know that every day that are suffering severe mental illness, every single day are getting up and they are making the choice to do the next right thing. They are making the choice to take their medication. They are making the choice to go to therapy. They are making the choice to be good parents. They are making the choice they go to teach school. There are firefighters, police officers, everybody. There are mothers and fathers. And so then I feel bad. They're thinking, well, I have a mental illness. Now am I categorized as every person who does evil acts? That's not fair.
Right?
It's not even, of course, you know, so the idea of, I think there's a very spiritual, there's an, just an illness in spirituality. And I think when, I think the loss of, or the lack of not teaching metaphysics, I think hurts people. I think people get to it very late in life, which I'm happy now that, you know, your documentary and all these things that, you know, have all these great scientists and all these great healers and people of faith that are talking about the truth that people can get to and have access to at a much younger age. And I think it's very, very important.
Yeah.
Because people don't understand energy, you know?
Yep. I know. The magic of the universe that your mom knew. And when I was reading this and she she was reading, I think, oh, this is another wonderful part. And just like you were saying, you're so grateful for the people that share. As you're sharing your experience, just the mother-daughter dynamic is helping, woke me up to like how much more I need to be engaged with my own mother, who is also the epitome of grace and class and just such a good mom. And I'm just, I'm like, I need to connect with her more. I'm just, you know, and so that woke me up to that. And then also with my daughter, who's almost five, you know, she literally has verbalized, you know, you need to give me more attention. I'm like, how does a four-year-old, I sound like the worst mom in the world, but I'm, you know, if I'm busy and caught up in work and doing a thing, like, so it's just having, you know, your mom's story of not getting, or feeling like she didn't get enough attention from her mom, but getting modeled this wonderful, successful woman. And then you had that conversation with your mom. I'm just like,
God. I had to. And it's great because at least she was, that's why I put in the book, because I thought, you know, mothers and daughters don't talk about this enough. And I think we all pretend, everyone knows there's this underlying tension. And the way my mom, you know, she loved Louise Hay. She loved, there's another book she loved, The Game of Life and How to Play It.
Yes.
Such a great book.
Oh, my gosh.
And
Florence Scovelshin.
Yes. And then Catherine Ponder is a great teacher, great metaphysical teacher. And, you know, so she'd say, you know, is there anything that, you know, you want to ask me at 24? And I started saying to her, I said, yeah, you know, I felt that I didn't receive a lot of attention from you and you're always focused on these people, but I knew that you loved me. But I, and it was, we're not having this conversation. I was a wonderful mother. I said, okay, well, why are you asking me if, why are you even asking me if you don't even want to acknowledge my feelings? Yeah. But the great part of it is then years later, our last birthday, because we have a shared birthday, our last birthday lunch, she remembered that from when I had that conversation at 24. And she said, I want to go back to that and I owe you an apology.
Wow.
And it was everything. So it was amazing that she said, I want to acknowledge your feelings and I'm sorry that I didn't clarify that I was correcting your behavior versus your soul.
I mean, that's amazing that she came
back to it on her own.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes. So metaphysics.
Yes.
I also think that you mentioned that angels are everywhere and we just need to learn how to recognize them. And you give beautiful accounts in the film and I mean in the book, and also talk about the film It's a Wonderful Life. The angel Clarence your dad's name.
And I thought when I was little, I was like, oh my God, my dad's an angel. That's what he does. He helps people. Of course his name is Clarence. I mean, I thought this whole thing, but I do believe in, I do believe that people come into your life, and I think we all think that angels look one way or another, and they're always going to be these fairy-like creatures, and you never know. It could be, somebody could be covered in tattoos and push you out of the way, and something all of a sudden falls down, you know, off of, you never know. But if you, what I've learned is whatever you believe, and we all know this, I mean, whatever you really believe, it, that shows up. Mm-hmm. It just, whatever you believe, and you could believe good, you could believe negative, it's and whatever you're focused on, the universe will just prove it to you all the time. And so I try to keep my beliefs, you know, my belief system aligned with, I believe that there are good people. I believe that there are good people walking this earth. I'm very aware that there are not. Mm-hmm. I know that too. But my intention is to align with as many positive and powerful and productive people as possible, because I need to learn too. Mm-hmm. And we all have gifts to share with each other. And I think it's part of the healing process is to connect with each other on such a deep, human, truthful level that healing can actually take place. Because I think if we're not vulnerable, like, for example, when I wrote the book, I called a friend of mine and I said, you know, what do you think? Do you have any final notes? And she said, do you really want the notes? I said, yes, I really want the notes. She said, your vulnerability is beautiful in the book, but you have it, I'm making up a number, you have it on page 36. It needs to be on page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They can't, anyone reading this book cannot wait till page 46, because they're going to think that you're some superhero and they will not connect to you as a broken, vulnerable person. And it was the best note that I received. And immediately I called my friend Cleo. I'm like, you have to help me because you write all the time. And how do we put this up on top and really let someone in. Because again, that was my intention of the book. Like, I'm going to go raw. I'm going to write everything I feel. And I pray that this opens, unlocks something for somebody else and their healing.
And when you, like you said, when you believe, and so much I want to get to, but like when you believe in angels and you, you know, we've all encountered them. And that's mm-hmm. just, for me, that's the proof that spirit. I'm getting signs all the time. All I'm getting mystical experiences where I'm like, there's just no way that there isn't a God, you know? And even when you encountered that woman in a, I don't know if it was a grocery store where she was colorfully and she was just like, all mixed mash of colors, probably not the pillar of fashion. And you heard a voice that said, compliment her earrings, compliment her earrings. That, to me, is the spirit coming through you 100%. So that you could be an angel to her in that moment.
100%. And I didn't even realize in that moment, because I'm thinking, I'm listening to this voice coming out of my heart, and I'm thinking, are you crazy? And then I'm talking to myself, and I'm looking around going, are people looking at me talking to myself? And I'm thinking, I'm not telling her that she looks great. She looks totally nuts. There's nothing right here. And it just was this prompting, and it's like that Holy Spirit prompting, tell her earrings are pretty. So I just said, you know, ma'am, excuse me, I think your earrings are beautiful. It was, you know, she had won the lottery and every good thing that was going to come to her was going to come to her. That's the way she responded to that one compliment. And you can see that she never felt seen. She, and then, you know, oh my God, these belong, you know, they were in her family, these belonged to my mother and I needed a sign and this and that. So I was her angel. And I think all of us, when we get these promptings, we're looking for the logic behind the prompting. And I tried to fight that too with my logic, and it's not about logic. When you're connecting with spirit, you're disconnecting from logic. It's of course you need to be logical and but you also have to be, you could be both. And you, and I now just say, if I'm supposed to be a blessing to somebody, well, you know, my mom used to say, wherever you work, that's your ministry. Wherever you are, if you're a barista, there's your ministry. If you're serving, when I was a waitress, she's like, there's your ministry. So talk to people, ask them about their children, try to, you don't know what someone's going through. You know, give a smile to someone, even if they don't return the smile, because wherever you go, there you are. And wherever you go, you take your ministry.
Even, I mean, there's a couple of examples in the book, but you, at the end of the book, you're talking about leaving the hospital, I think, and you're sitting in your car and someone's honking at you and you're just in this like shock of like your world has just been shattered. And instead of getting, taking all that anger you have towards this individual that just changed your life, you just like wave this kind of resigned wave, like I got nothing else right now in this moment, so go around, you know? And, and but that guy honking at you was in his own world, had no idea what just occurred. And had he known, he would feel...
Exactly.
You know?
And we don't, none of us know what we're, what any of us are going through. And we're all guilty of it, of just being impatient or doing this. And I think the awareness of just trying to remind ourselves every day, okay, before I leave this house today, I'm going to encounter a lot of people, and I, or a few, but I don't know all of their journeys. I don't know what anyone's going through. I don't know. Somebody could have just gotten a terrible diagnosis from the doctor. How am I going to know that? Somebody might have just left Children's Hospital visiting their child who's going to die in 3 months. And, you know, we just don't know. Somebody could have gotten a divorce. Somebody just could have lost their job. So I try to be as cognizant as possible of, you know, it's the 10% of, even if none of those things happen, I'm going to assume that it's being human. It's just being human. And it's tough being human. And that guy who was honking at me after I pulled out, and there was nobody else, Kelly, nobody else on the street. It was that early in the morning. I'm like, there's five other lanes.
Go around.
And he just blared his horn at me. And I remember just sitting just so scared, like, oh my God, my mom. And I was like, sorry, sorry. And I'm saying to myself, like, someone just murdered my mom. I'm sorry. And he just, you know, he kind of just drove by and was so angry. And it's those moments where you realize, you know, oh, well, how many times have I been so impatient and honked at somebody or, you know.
Called someone an idiot.
Or, you know, this. So it's, we just have to be gentle while, as gentle as possible while we're all on this human experience, and all of us have different journeys, different lessons.
This incredible episode is brought to you by Just Thrive. Guys, I'm sure you've heard about the gut-brain connection, but I'm here to remind you how important it is to keep that line of communication strong and clear. I mean, think about it. Our gut instincts, the butterflies in our stomach before a first date, the punch to the gut we feel when we've been betrayed. So much of our emotional resilience and response comes from our brain sending signals to our gut chakra. Well, I've been supporting my gut-brain connection with the perfect 1-2 punch from Just Thrive supplements, the Just Thrive probiotic and their mood biotic, Just Calm. Just Calm's proprietary ingredients have been clinically proven to do all the things I'm really needing support with in today's crazy world. They help me quickly soothe everyday stress, think sitting in rush hour traffic, encourage a steady and balanced mood so I have more response vibes rather than reaction vibes. It improves my alertness and focus so I can make a dent in my never-ending to-do list. And it even helps me get better sleep, which is, you know, just the key to health and happiness. And if you listen to the episode where I interview Just Thrive founder Tina Anderson, you will know and trust in the power of their unique and incredibly effective probiotic, proven to survive the stomach acid and arrive in the gut activated and fully alive. Sadly, that is really rare with other leading probiotics. If you're ready to take control and live your healthiest life yet, you can get 20% off your first 90-day bottle of Just Calm and Just Thrive probiotic today. Visit justthrivehealth.com and use promo code HEAL. That's H-E-A-L. While you're there, check out all their clinically backed products. And don't miss the episode where I interview Tina Anderson to learn more about this groundbreaking company. Take control today with Just Thrive. I love that you talk about, you know, we're kind of a closure-obsessed society and, you know, there's these however many steps of grief, and it's like, yeah. And again, like, yeah. You're in repair. We don't know. It's a never-ending, potentially never-ending, yes, process. Mm-hmm. It's a new existence. It's a roller coaster of emotion, mm-hmm. And that's what I'm like, just trying to. This is such a beautiful share, because to give permission, it doesn't have to be a finite time of like grieving or when you're gonna get over it or moving through or guilt, yeah, for living your life. 5 weeks later you had a birthday party, yes, for Sarah, yes, and you guys were, you know, there's joyous. No rules, like
there's no rules.
It's about lit, you know. And then you talk about, you know, who do I want to be through this tragedy, mm-hmm, and living your life, as your dad yes, said, the dash between the dates.
Isn't that great?
It's so
great.
He
said it every day of his life. You come with a number, Nicole, and you end with a number. What are you going to do with your dash? Your dash is your life. How are you going to live your life? If you want a significant life, you have to put in the work to make a significant life. If you want to be lazy, you're going to have nothing come to you. I mean, he would just say it's always your choice, but what are you going to do with your dash? You don't know how long you have. And it is a gift. I mean, he loved life, and he had a tough life. And was born into a tough life, and it was tough until he's probably 40. But he loved his life force. He honored his life force, and he would always say, "I'm living as long as I can." That's what he'd always say to me, and I suggest you do the same, young lady. But he, you know, when you talked about Sarah and the healing, it was important, because all these books, I'm like, okay, this step, well, I'm not feeling that today, and I was like, I'm not putting, okay, and I decided. You know, yes, I did look at myself in the mirror and I thought, you know, was that, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? And then I could feel my intuition saying, who are you going to be from this moment forward? Choose who you are going to be. And that was huge for me, because I said, well, I want to be a thoughtful person. I want to be courageous. I want to be helpful to my father. I want to be, and all of a sudden it was, I started noticing my spine was like, you know, I was sitting up straighter and I was walking with pride, and I want to be alive and I want to honor my mother's life. And I don't want to get stuck in the quicksand of grief, because it could be, you can go down fast. I was going down fast. And there were other days where I was wearing it like a very, very heavy coat, but a coat that was uncomfortable, that was somebody else's coat that never been cleaned. I mean, it was awful. And I knew I didn't want to feel like that all the time either. So you move through it, and it's just, you have to move through the grief. You don't know what, there was one day I drove up in my driveway. I had been singing a song 5 minutes before. got to my driveway, new song came on, thought about my mom, pulled into my driveway and just stopped the car and screamed at the top of my lungs for 5 minutes, just screaming. I was like, I hurt my wrist. I was banging on the dashboard. I thought I was losing my mind, but I had to just, it just shows up.
Move it through.
And you just got to move with it. Mm-hmm. It's a wave. Sometimes it's really high, like surfing. Sometimes it's low. And you just ride them, and then and it doesn't stay stuck in your body. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very important just to acknowledge the grief.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love how you were so strong with the inspiration of both your parents' values mm-hmm. and these great anecdotes mm-hmm. that you share that were inspiring to me. And then, you know, people were concerned that you weren't grieving because
yeah.
you were so strong
yeah.
and moving through
yes.
with such
yes.
action. And you know, you described this amazing community of friends of your mm-hmm. parents and yourself coming together. And you were just like, okay. And they were just, you know, in the beginning, just doing things
yes.
for you, just like showed up and helped. Like, it's just such a beautiful, like, these opportunities, tragedies are opportunities for community to step in.
Absolutely.
You know?
It's, and I've never experienced, I've read about these things, but I mean, I'm telling you, my girlfriends, when they came in, they were all super women. They didn't ask me a thing. They didn't say, do you want us to do this? Do you want me to do, it was, I'm doing this, Laura's doing this, Candace is doing this. I mean, Gwyneth was just in the kitchen, you're doing this, 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 this. Everyone said, and they all went to do their thing. And then it was go upstairs, take a shower, get yourself together. Just know that food's going to be here. Your dad's going to be taken care of. You don't have to carry the whole world on your shoulders. Mm. We're here for you. And a big part of the grieving process, what I've learned is being, what's the right word? Nourished, I guess. And transformed and restored mm. by love. And love is action. And so the times where my friends would say, okay, you know, come over, we're going to have a home-cooked meal, we'll have a bottle of wine, and we'll just talk. And whatever comes up tonight. And let's celebrate Jackie tonight. And let's do this tonight. And there were things that were never in a book that I could never find. Mm. And I think it's really important that during the process, to your point, it's you get to build communities and people get to see the real human experience through a tragedy and through needing to show up for someone. Mm-hmm. And showing up is on 90% of it. Mm-hmm. It's not even saying anything. It's really just, for me, seeing people in my kitchen that first night, I didn't even know who was coming into my house. Every 2 seconds, there was five other people walking in. They didn't have a lot to say. Most of them are crying, but they did have this energy of, we're here for you. Mm. And we're going to do whatever you need to do. And if you want us to say nothing, we will. But we're just going to sit here with you mm-hmm. and go ride this pain and ride through this grief with you.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Oh, my gosh. And then you also talk about, you know, how when there's a loss, like, say, God forbid, a loss of a child, mm-hmm. Oftentimes, like, the couple doesn't survive. The
yeah.
parents don't survive staying together. Mm-hmm. And so you and Ted had to sit down.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it was, you know, you guys are both grieving in different ways, it was affecting or could potentially affect
Absolutely.
The relationship. Could you speak to that
yes.
a little bit just so
yes.
people can consciously, like, deal
yes.
with it?
Yes, I understand now. You know, we've all read all the stats of people breaking up, especially over a child dying, the divorce rates are up, families are destroyed. It could be over anything. And a death can really change a relationship. This was so different and tragic and violent that, you know, Ted was grieving. He grieved very quietly, very privately. And it was almost, I was getting angry. Like, are you not upset? Do you not understand what is happening? Like, hello, are you human? And he was like, of course I am, but I'm getting up and I'm going to work and I'm trying to do this. And he didn't know how to process my grief and I didn't know how to process his grief. So we had to sit down with each other and say, no matter what, even if I don't understand you and you don't understand me, we are not gonna break. We're just not gonna break. We're gonna have to come to center. It might take some time, but let's at least be committed to staying a strong family unit, and I'll try to understand you and you try to understand me as much as possible, but it's at least let's start with the intention of that and make it solid. And within a few weeks we noticed a change, and I started watching him become more vulnerable and I started getting what I needed versus, you know, he was giving me everything that he thought I wanted. I wasn't receiving anything I needed. I wasn't communicating to him what I needed because I didn't even know at the time what I needed.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't know. I, you know, and a lot of the times it was, I need to be alone and process this, which is, I also write in the book, like I found this peace of mind when I got into the bathtub at night and I would light a candle and I would talk to my mom. Mm. And that was my therapy for a very long, I mean, I still do it, but for 9 months straight, there was not one night I did not talk to her. And it was at a certain time, and it was my quiet time, and I asked her everything I wanted to ask her. I vented everything that I was upset about and disappointed in and what happened, and I was scared for her, and I was like, where's your soul? You know, give me a sign, you're okay. I mean, I know where you are, and I thank you for your faith, but I need to know that you're okay. Mm-hmm. And I got them. You know, little by little, there were different signs, and I knew she was okay.
Yeah. Can you, well, first, with the Ted thing, you know, when you're just such a raw, open wound, you know, you take both people would take everything personally, so you kind of isolating would make him scared, and then him not want to do the wrong thing, so he retreats, and then you're just like, you know, so it is, I don't know if that was happening, but I'm just saying what could happen. And so just to have that intention and conversation, you know, and then there's a softening around and kind of an accepting and an allowance of how people are doing it, not taking it personally and not walking on eggshells to do the wrong thing.
Because we were really walking on eggshells for a while.
Yeah.
And I kept saying, you know, I was getting, you know, making sure everyone had the food, and or if they needed a massage, or if they needed this, or they needed that. And one day I just broke and I said, who's doing anything for me? Mm-hmm. Did anyone even think about anything for me? And the response was, the whole family was, you always do everything for yourself, and you always, we didn't even know what to do for you because you're always the one. And I remember just breaking down. I said, but it's just the idea that you, even if I didn't want it, that you made the effort to do something for me. And I had to explain that. And, you know, Ted's, you know, typical man is like, oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
And you're always so strong. So they were probably like, she'll get mad at us if we even suggest
Ted
that she takes
saying,
care of herself.
Like, I didn't want to get yelled. I'm like, well, just get yelled at. but you know, do something so I can think that I could feel. I wanted to feel that I was being taken care of, you know, because it was salt in the wound all the time. It's just what it felt like all the time. If we had an argument, it was just a big open wound and vinegar and salt being thrown into it, and every conversation we were having just wasn't landing, and there was no grace. And so I had to pray for a lot of grace and mercy.
And it is true, like any loss of anybody that you love is tough, but when you throw in this like senseless violence to it, it's a whole another ballgame.
It's a different level of anger, different level of disappointment. It's all the healers in the world didn't have, you know, there was nothing of, oh, we're just going to think differently and think, it was, I have to, okay, this is me really feeling these things. Yes, I had to decide on who I wanted to be, but then I also made a decision that I was going to move through this grief and not deny it. And because I wanted to be a lighthouse. I wanted to be a person that still, you know, I couldn't even bear the idea of him taking my light too. You know, a light went out, and a light went out in Beverly Hills, and a light went out in all of Los Angeles, because my mom lived that way, and she gave her light to everyone. And I thought, my God, if I stay stuck in this quicksand of hate and revenge, my light's gonna go out, and I'm not gonna be a lighthouse, and then I'm not gonna live the life that I wanna live. So it all goes back to the choice and the decision and the celebrating. You know, Sarah's birthday was really important. And Sarah was so sweet. She said, well, Nicole, you know, you're in grief. Don't think about me. Don't worry about it. I go, no, Sarah, I actually need this. My soul actually needs a creative project that brings joy, that celebrates another soul. Mm. That is what my mom loved doing. She loved birthdays. And it actually was the beginning of the healing journey for me, of having this party, having good group of friends around. And it took my mind off of the pain and the sadness for, even if it was just 2 hours, mm-hmm. because life goes on.
Yeah. And you knew your mom loved birthdays, and she would be like, don't let this guy steal Sarah's birthday either. Yeah. You know?
Yes. You know? It's don't, you know, the thief comes in to, you know, it's like scripture, old scripture, to steal and kill and destroy. But that's energetically, it doesn't necessarily, mm-hmm. you know, it's stealing joy and killing joy and destroying any hope. Yeah. And I thought, nope.
Yeah. It's, you say in the book, in the face of death, sometimes you just need to live.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the story, just because you're so good at the like real human emotions and then also the vulnerability and the way. Will you tell the story? Because I also, you know, for people that, I just love signs. I love mm-hmm. signs, and when you get chills and when you feel that connection from the other side, that it gives us reassurance, you know. Can you tell us the 352 story
with my Laura goodness.
And how you were like mad at Laura? It was so good.
So I had, so my girlfriend Laura said to me one night, she said, babe, you know, and I just asked my mom in the bathroom, like, let me know you're okay. And Laura kept saying, you know, your mom's waking me up, and it's, you know, this time in the morning, and it's 3:33 or whatever it was. It was, your mom's waking me up, and she's telling me this, and she's giving me this sign, and she's okay. And she's going on, and I'm thinking, really? Because I'm waking up at 3:52, and really? So you're getting an angel sign? I'm not getting an angel sign. Wow. So I'd say to my mom, wow, mom, okay. And then it went on for a while. Laura, God bless her, she's out looking for a resting place for my mom. And, you know, she's driving around to Santa Barbara and up and down the coast of, maybe Jackie would like to rest here. It's the one thing my mom, it was the last piece of the puzzle she didn't give me. And she's like, you could decide where I rest. Mm. And then the desert, and then I asked my mom for a sign. I said, you know, come on. You're waking up Laura at 3:32. I'm getting 3:52. You've got to be kidding. Like, I need a sign that you're really going to connect with me. And the death certificates come in the mail. And I open it up, and I'm reading, and I'm thinking, okay, this is part of grief. Let me read everything that's here. And then time of death, 3:52. I mean, I was like, are you, okay, wow. I mean, it was, wow. I got my sign,
yep.
3:52, because I kept writing it down. Like, every morning I'd wake up, like, what,
3:52? Why isn't it 3:33?
Why, sure it, I mean, 3:33, give me a 2:22, yeah. Give me a 1:11 something. And it was so funny how Laura was like, oh, babe, your mom came to me, 3:33. I'm like, that's nice.
You're like, that's, why you great. Got to Laura?
Yeah. Why, really, Laura? Thanks.
So
yeah.
Funny.
So but you know, you ask for a sign and you'll get it, mm-hmm. you know, and they come in different ways, but, and it was not the sign that I ever expected, but it was undeniable for me of, I'm waking up at 3:52, she's waking me up at 3:52, and then the death certificate says 3:52.
I mean, I
I know, full chill. I know.
Forgiveness is one that, yes. continues to elude me. I intellectually, I get it. I, you know, Michael Beckwith,
I love Dr. I love him.
You know?
Yeah.
And I'm just putting myself in your shoes, and I'm like, I get, like, theoretically, I forgive the perpetrator, the murderer, because I don't want him to steal my light. But, like, is there ever a feeling of forgiveness, of lightness?
No. You know what? It's... Forgiveness is a state of mind. It is not, you're never going to feel like forgiving anybody, because it's such an old, barbaric word that it's, everyone thinks it means condonement, which I used to, I was like, how, I could never forgive that person. And my mom would say, yeah, because you're saying that because you're saying, I could never condone that behavior. Mm-hmm. I can never excuse that behavior. It is never about excusing a behavior or condoning bad behavior. But forgiveness for me is a state of mind of power. And when you are in a state of unforgiveness, you are honestly giving all of your power away, all of your light away. All of your life force energy is going to someone or something that has done something horrible. But you cannot unscramble the egg. It's a wrap. Whatever that deed was, it's horrible. Whatever the act was, it's horrible. But I knew if I focused on his act, what happened, I was not going to move forward and create the life that I wanted to live. You can't do both at the same time. I can't hate someone all day long, meaning think about them mm-hmm. all day long, focus on somebody who I don't know, somebody who did a horrific act, somebody who took my mother away. But if I want to create a good future for myself and I still want to live the best life I can live, then I cannot focus on him and I cannot focus on that tragedy that happened because I cannot unring that bell. I decided I am forgiving for myself, meaning I'm giving up the anger, the frustration, the hate every day. It's like washing a dirty washcloth. It wasn't like, oh, I forgive and it's over. Mm-hmm. Every time he creeps into my mind or the act creeps into my mind or that night creeps into my mind, the act of forgiveness is not, oh, sorry for him. It's, I'm living here right now. I have a husband. I have children. I have friends. I have dogs. I have a wonderful life. I have this. I have this. I have this. And I want to focus on creating good. So forgiveness for me is just turning my energy away from negativity. Mm-hmm. But is never condoning an act, ever, of bad behavior or violent behavior. And I think that's where we all get tripped up. You know, I had an ex-boyfriend a long time ago. I ran into him and he says, how come we're not getting together? I text you all the time. I thought you forgave me. I go, I forgave you 15 years ago.
Yeah.
I don't ever want to see you again, but I forgave you a long time ago. And meaning I don't even think about you. Good luck. Yeah, I wish you well, but I don't, you know, I think another thing people think is forgiveness also includes reconciliation.
Yes.
Sometimes it does, and sometimes it does not. And I think a lot of us get tripped up in, oh, I forgive you, so we'll continue the relationship. Sometimes, and then sometimes, no. But the forgiveness is still there, which is just meaning it's the removal of such a dead weight. It's just the removal of a dead weight. It's bye.
Yeah.
Just,
you
know.
Spiritual surgery.
Yes, spiritual surgery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so good because also when something like this happens, you realize life is so short and you do not have time or energy for the ex-boyfriend or for anybody that's wronged you.
Right. We all have a choice of where do we want our energy to go to? Mm. You know, how are we going to create our lives? Like I keep saying that because we do it every day. We plug, every time my phone's dead, I'm always like, oh, I didn't plug it in. I didn't charge. I didn't go to the source. The outlet is the source.
Yeah.
And so every day, before I get out of bed, I don't look at my phone. I say my prayers. I am grateful for today. I ask to be guided every day. I ask for everything. But I have to connect with source before I even go out into this world, because I always tell my husband, because he's the opposite. And I said, you just let 20 million people into your brain before you even started the day. You let every problem that's happening in the world become your problem before you even got into the shower. Mm-hmm. It makes a huge difference when you don't do that.
It really is. And that's why you made such a beautiful distinction earlier about mental illness and a spiritual illness.
Yes, I think we have a real spiritual illness going on because we're not based in a value system mm-hmm. anymore. You know, so this rise in bullying, I'm like, yeah, but bullying, what is that? That's really just somebody saying, I'm going to disrespect your soul over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Well, when you have an epidemic, when you have a pandemic of that with young children doing that to each other, I think it says a lot about the home. I think it says a lot about the value systems of what's, you can't do that.
Yeah.
You know?
And they're certainly not getting the values or the foundations that we were fortunate to have.
Yes.
I mean, I read your book and I'm like, wow, these are such...
But thank God we have, you know, and I think they help society.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the last thing I'll tell you really quickly, because I thought about this just driving here, when, you know, I went to Hawthorne Elementary School on Rexford, and then I ended up moving up the street years ago with Ted, and we've since moved. But this is when I saw things in society start changing, and it was about values and recognition, seeing each other. And I'd watched the crossing guard when I was growing up. My mom would pick me up from school. The crossing guard would walk us across the street. My mom would say hello. My mom would say thank you. I'd look at the person. Thank you so much. Have a nice day. See you tomorrow. When I started watching recently now, I see the parents on the phone. The kids are walking next to them. They do not look at the person who is making sure that traffic is not about to come and barrel down and hit
on
them.
Their children, yeah. Right.
But there is another human being who is not even being looked at. There's another human being who's not being acknowledged, and no one is saying thank you for their service. And when children grow up seeing their parents like that, I'm thinking, well, of course, everyone's mad at all these kids. Mm-hmm. Like, but their parents weren't doing it. They've checked out too. Mm-hmm. And it's the little things like that of making sure you hold the door open for somebody, making sure you let the people out of the elevator, all these things, people laugh at all these, oh, good manners, oh, who needs them? Mm-hmm. You know, you don't get a good society without, or a thriving society with shitty manners. Mm-hmm. Good luck. It doesn't happen. Yeah. Right? That's so I just hope, and it goes back to spiritual, it goes back to the values based in spirituality, mm-hmm. and honoring the souls that are in front of you.
Totally. And I was thinking about, you know, what do I do? What do I, you know, and I'm just like, I'm searching for my own I'm trying so hard to remember, like I have these knowings and then I get these signs, and like, mm-hmm. just to remember my divinity. Yes. And then as the more I can remember mine, the more I can see it in everybody else. So I'm just here to learn, experience, and, you know, help remind people of their own divinity as, yes. well. And as you're talking about the crossing guard, I think of Bill Withers, who, and this is just like to remind the listener right now of their divinity. Bill Withers, before your father discovered him, mm-hmm. and believed in him, mm-hmm. and that was your father's genius, yeah. who discovered him. He was an airline mechanic.
Yes.
He'd already written Ain't No Sunshine, Lean On Me, yep. and Grandmother's Hands.
Yep.
And this, had he not been given the opportunity or read it for the, mm-hmm. opportunity, I mean, who knows the genius and beauty that's the gifts that are in that crossing guard, or anybody, you know, or maybe, exactly. that's the noble job they're here to do.
That's right.
But we have to understand that no matter who, there's angels everywhere.
Yes.
And there's genius in everybody.
And everybody is here to fulfill a purpose.
Yeah.
You know, it's all of us need each other. Mm-hmm. If you have a restaurant and you can have the best chef in the world. Well, if you don't have any waitresses, and you don't have a hostess, and you don't have a janitor, and you don't have busboys, you don't have a restaurant.
Yeah.
It's not going to work. Everybody needs everybody. Nobody is more important than the other person because of their paycheck. It doesn't matter. Everything, we all work as units. You, yes. know, you need the paramedics. We need, you know, the doctors. We need the teachers. We all need each other because we are all here serving each other, yes. all day long. And I like that you know, it's honoring the divinity in yourself so that you can honor the divinity in someone else. And sometimes we even say it silently to each other, mm-hmm. which I think is nice.
Yeah.
But I have to remind myself of that daily too.
Totally.
You know, because it's very easy to forget, and then it's easy to get frustrated, and I'm very impatient. Everyone knows that about me. Like, I try to, I'm better now, but it's oh, right, we're human. Mm. Right, you know, we just... Someone's having a, someone, just whatever it is, mm-hmm. Just tread lightly.
Yeah. Grace.
Yeah.
Grace. For ourselves and others.
And I think that's what, another, world. That's why I wanted to put grace in the book, because it's something that's undeserving. Mm-hmm. You don't earn grace. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't earn grace.
Yeah.
It's something that's given to us, and we're very lucky, mm-hmm. that the universe, as soon as we ask for it, or as soon as we acknowledge, and we're aware of, oh, you know, I shouldn't have done that. I'm so sorry. I was short with this person. Grace comes in as soon as we acknowledge.
Amen.
Yeah.
It sure does. Is there, and this is the last question, but yes. is there anything since you published the book, any new, either that, like any new realizations that you're like, oh, well, I wish I could just do a digital edit, like add that one too. Or is there any last thoughts you want to leave with you?
You know, I would say... I wish, you know, it's funny, as I sign people's books now, and I can see their look in their eye, they're hoping for something, you know, and they want me to say something that's going to change them. And I wrote to this woman. I just wrote. I said, I wish you a beautiful journey. And she looked back at me and she said, I said, oh, I could write something else. She goes, no, I thank you for just that simple phrase of wishing me a beautiful journey. She said, because I just forgot that I was, she goes, I just remembered I'm on a journey.
Yeah.
She's like, I completely forgot. And I said, life is, that's what it means of the end is the end on the date mm-hmm. that you leave. But until you leave, it is not a straight line. Mm-hmm. It is up and down and around and but I think if there's one wish that I had is I wish that we were all wishing for each other a peaceful, wonderful journey.
Mm, love that.
Yeah.
Perfect way to end. Thank you so
much.
Thank
you.
Thank you so much.
So happy we did this.
Yeah, me too.
This is great. This is great.
We wish you all a beautiful journey. Thank you for listening to the Heal with Kelly podcast. Be sure to tune in every Thursday for more empowering wisdom and inspiring healing stories. And make sure you hit the follow button on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss that one episode that holds the answer you've been searching for. Oh, and if you found this episode inspiring, please rate, review, and share Heal with Kelly so that we can grow our audience and reach more people. We truly appreciate it. Lots of love.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.